Okay, great. So let's kick off. So what is the new wellness revolution? And of course, again, his first book was in 2002, and his initial discussion in this book was what did I miss in 2002 that has changed the direction of the wellness industry? And some of the things that he pointed out was, number one, he missed how quickly the government would embrace wellness food standards. He just thought government would be slower in that regard, so that's one thing that he skipped. He missed the lack of voluntary conversion of many sickness and food industry providers to wellness, and we're going to talk about that today. And he also missed the extent to which the bifurcation in U.S. and other developed nations would continue into wellness haves and have-nots. And what we're seeing is that millions are embracing wellness, but even more millions have turned the opposite direction, and he didn't see this happening. He was not projecting that over the next 5 to 10 years from 2002, that people would become more obese in our society and we would create more type 2 diabetes. He thought that with the education that's out there today and what's available in the wellness markets, that clearly we'd see those numbers coming down, and the exact opposite has happened. So obesity number 65% today in the United States and mounting type 2 diabetes. And he made a statement in his book, make U.S. medically look like a third world nation. And so, but because of these trends, he said it's greatly accelerated the need and opportunity for more wellness entrepreneurs like you and me. And he listed in the book many wellness revolutionaries that he honors. He talked, I'll just give you a couple of them. Frank Yanovitz is a wellness cardiologist who created a business specializing in preventing heart disease versus just treating it. Isn't that great? Specializing in preventing heart disease. Steve Demos, he's called the soy wonder, who founded Silk Soy Milk and assembled the first billion-dollar national wellness brand. So that's awesome. Medical doctors who are trying to put themselves out of business, like Russ Reiss, R-E-I-S-S. He's a heart surgeon who seeks to eliminate the need for heart surgery through stem cell research. And then he also discussed nonprofit professionals like Jeff Tabin, who has taken the most popular operation in the world, a $3,500 anti-aging cataract surgery, and he made it available to millions of people in the third world by using contemporary technology to reduce the price to $20 per surgery. And so he just touts many others as well, but he's been a good laundry list of people that he said, hey, kudos to these kind of people who are really making a difference in this wellness revolution. He also talked about wealth being redistributed to more people. In 1991 to 2001, we doubled the number of millionaires in the U.S. By 2016, he's predicting it to be three times the number that were millionaires in 2001. So important in this is a trend that the more people increase their wealth, the greater proportion of their income they spend on wellness. So we can expect wellness to even have a greater boost because of this redistribution of income. All of the top 10 on Forbes 400 were born poor or middle class. This also shows that there's being a great shift in wealth in the world as well. So it's not just the wealthy who continue to promote themselves as wealthy and bring along family members. We're seeing people that were rags to riches stories in the U.S. Great success is now more than ever before in human history about making a choice. And I thought that was a great quote. We should use that frequently as we go out and talk about success in the wellness industry and success in life. The wellness trends highlighted in the new wellness revolution. He highlighted 10 trends in there, and again, I'll go through each one of them. The wellness revolution began in the U.S., but it's growing even faster internationally. So he made some commentary about how other countries in Asia was particularly one where we see much greater growth in terms of approach to the wellness industry. Even more so there, because the wellness products and his books and things like that, I have exceeded sales in the United States. So you see it's growing even faster for people around the world than it is in the United States. Two, wellness today is primarily a grassroots movement driven by entrepreneurs and small businesses. We see that happening in a large part by people like you and us, the direct selling professionals. We see chiropractors, osteopaths, other health professionals, and small businesses doing this. So many entrepreneurs are out there attacking this or jumping in on this wellness revolution, this wellness industry. The third trend, he said some large sickness-oriented food companies have switched sides. One that he picked out was the world's largest dairy, Dean Foods. They have U.S. sales of over $10 billion, and they purchased one of the best wellness food companies in the world, Steve Demos, $300 million White Wave Inc., and he's the maker of the Silk Soy Milk, the one we talked about earlier. And they have now been improving their products and moving into directness of wellness versus sickness. That's a great trend to see. Of course, he didn't only named one. I don't know how many others are out there. So, but it's still great to see that some larger organizations are stepping up. Fourth factor was retailers and restaurants, formerly only sickness industry, have switched. He brought up McDonald's, which I'm not real savvy about or necessarily in promotion, but they have made a shift. In 2005, they began selling fruit and walnut salad, and overnight it became the country's largest food service consumer of apples. An estimated 54 million pounds of apples per year are bought by McDonald's. So this company once known for Supersize Me is definitely taking a step outward. Of course, we see salads out there, but we also know that they spray their lettuce with a chemical spray to keep it green because they're always also about the bottom dollar. But again, knowing that this lumbering giant feeds more than 46 million people a day, it's great that we see some step in the direction in terms of wellness. Walmart is another one that we can look at. On March 26, 2006, Walmart opened its first organic food super center. And where was that? No other than Plano, Texas. And so Walmart, you know, may be today even one of the largest wellness food retailers around. So we're seeing some switches in retailers. The same switching, here's another trend in the wellness industry. The same switching did not take place among sickness industry participants. So unlike the $1.3 trillion food industry, the $2 trillion medical industry has not embraced wellness and shows very few signs of doing so. They're either ignoring the wellness or fighting it across their territory. And he projects that the sickness industry is poised to lose out to wellness. So it just, again, improves our opportunity and gives entrepreneurs and health professionals who realize that the wellness is a new movement a huge, you know, opportunity to step in that openness that the sickness industry is opening up for us to take that away. The sixth trend is thousands of new wellness products and services that have come to market. And we see that across the board. Many of them he hadn't projected would occur until 2010, 12, 14, and they happened as fast as 2007. And he named a couple of them diagnostic equipment as well. In 2004, a DNA-based swab kit to identify vitamin deficiencies became available for $10 per test. In 2005, a $10 million room-sized fingertip reading light scanner that reads antioxidant levels was redesigned into a book-sized unit so you can use it off a laptop computer. So there's the reading antioxidant levels. So there's just different techniques that are out there, even more so today. Again, he printed his book in 2007, so we see more and more of that in the marketplace. We also see many of you saw the Apple Watch that was announced last week, I believe. I think Lydia was all over that because everybody in my family will probably have one the day it comes out. But the neat thing is that they're actually doing diagnostics on an Apple Watch. So your doctor can be fed immediately data on what your blood sugar levels, your heartbeat, how straight you're walking. So they can pre-detect whether you have tendencies towards Parkinson's or other conditions that would cause you not to have good balance. So all these things are coming up in the medical industry that are really cool, that are going to help us be more proactive about our health. They're also going to have a major impact on the health industry in that you're going to see a lot of the early, you know, like the waiting rooms and the early testing. That stuff's going to go by the wayside because most of the things that are diagnostic can be sent to your medical doctor just by wearing a phone. Sorry, we have some grass cutters outside. Oh, Lydia says you can't hear them, only I can hear them. I'm sorry. Never done one of these calls from a car before, so this is new to me. All right, so... So anyway, those are wellness products. The seventh trend is from 2004 to 2007, enormous changes occurred in health insurance. HSAs, HRAs, we've seen all of those come out to allow employees 100% income tax deduction for many other wellness expenditures, and that's cool as well. eighth trend, 2005, the cost of providing U.S. employees sickness health benefits exceeded the profits for the Fortune 500, threatening their existence. That is a trend, and that's why we see so much contract workers today. You can see the results of that is overwhelming. And, you know, you and I can complain about, oh, my gosh, look at all the employee benefits. Employees are no longer employees. They're now contract workers. They're going to have to pay for their own sickness, all that kind of stuff. Well, what do you think that's going to cause them to be? More proactive about their wellness. So what a perfect target market for all of us is to somehow get involved in contract workers' organizations to help them put together a plan for proactive wellness, because they're not going to be able to afford to pick up the cost that employers used to cover for them either. And it's, again, a huge boom for the wellness industry. Number nine, despite the wellness industry rising from $200 to $500 billion in 5 years, the untapped market continues to rise, right? And we see adult obesity up 4%, childhood up 10%. So the new wellness revolution explains how the population of every developed nation continues to divide itself into two opposing socioeconomic groups, those who are fit and healthy and take care of their wellness and those who don't. The terrible phenomenon has catastrophic economic and social consequences. So we know that we have a crisis that we're breeding because we have those who are totally conscious of wellness, and we have a growing group that are unconscious. So we can see that this whole wellness revolution is open and ready to enter into people's lives, because we have more and more people that are falling victim to what we call this, he refers to as the food industry debacle. So anyway, those are 10 trends that help support us in the wellness revolution. Let's go to the second chapter. We're going to talk about why we need a revolution. Why is it that we need a revolution? And we do need a revolution, because we see so many of these things happening, and we're sitting back and watching and saying, it's time for us to make a difference in this world, because if we don't, we're going to fall out of sync, and we're going to just be basically watching people exit this earth at early and early ages when there's absolutely no need for that to happen. So let me just read a note for you. I was going to read something from one of the pages here for you out of the book. Hang on 1 second. And he said, this is a quote from him. He said, incredibly powerful economic forces are preventing people from taking control of their health and are actually encouraging them to gain weight. Forces so powerful that nothing short of a revolution will be able to stop them. So we desperately need to see a revolution occur. And he talks about entrepreneurs and revolution are really the same kinds of people. And we talked about, remember what was the main theme at Manifest? Revolution, right? And that was a revolution of thinking. Well, Paul Zane Pilser is also a revolution of thinking, but it's also the wellness revolution about taking back control of your health. And both revolutionaries and entrepreneurs are kind of born into different circumstances, but they're the same kinds of people. Both see status quo in need of change, and both are willing to take the risks and reap the rewards of changing it. So we're necessary. Our revolutionary leaders are necessary to instigate and implement the reforms that we so need. And if we look at the difference, if you look at the sickness industry, we've always talked about the sickness industry and sickness business as being reactive. Despite its enormous size, people become customers only when they are stricken by or react to a specific condition or ailment. No one ever really wants to be a customer of the sickness industry, right? Whereas the wellness industry is proactive. People voluntarily become customers to feel healthier, to reduce the effects of aging, to avoid becoming customers of the sickness business. Everyone wants to be a customer of this earlier stage approach to health. So a dramatic difference between the sickness industry and wellness industry that we need to recognize and what we're doing about it. And in any industry based on the new technology, if there's any industry and it's based on a new technology, like we can look at our glyconutrient technology as a new technology, the greatest entrepreneurial fortunes are consistently made by those who distribute products and services rather than by those who make them. That's a quote right out of his book. And who are we? We are a group of Manitech associates that are taking on the distribution of a new technology, glyconutrient technology, and he's projecting we are in the absolute best position to make entrepreneurial fortunes because of where we are positioned. So I thought that was another super quote for all of us. The other thing that's interesting happened is that in the past, they used to have all the rich people used to be the fast people because they had more money and they bought more of the sweets and all that good stuff. You even see this historically in the books that you've seen in the past. But that has totally changed. And now poor is directly tied to obesity. Poverty equals obesity, a totally different shift. And, of course, that a lot of that comes from the fact that poor people tend to eat worse foods. They go after the quick fix. They go after fast food. They buy things that are pretty trashy out of the grocery stores, unlike what we would buy if we had extra money. We're going to buy organic foods, healthy foods to keep us as healthy as long as possible. So we now have a total paradigm shift from rich fat man, now poor is directly tied to obesity. If we understand how the food industry works today, it's critically important for entrepreneurs wanting to lead or participate in this revolution to understand what the packaged food companies do and what they're doing. Because, you've probably heard Paul Zaden Pilzer talk about going out, and if you were first time landing on Earth, if you ate a banana, you'd think it was exhilarating. If you ate a second banana, it wouldn't be as great as the first one. By the third banana, you're tired of it. And he says there's a couple things happening there. First of all, you're getting tired of the same taste, so we get worn out, right, because it's the same taste. He also said that our body is trying to tell us that we have too many of the potassium or whatever the nutrients are. We're getting overfed in that nutrient category by doing that. So he says there's a couple of things going on in our body. Well, the food companies have figured this out. They've figured it out, and they have hired brilliant minds, not just in the marketing arena, i.e., the guys who know how to put the sexy, actresses and actors out there and make you absolutely have to have something that they drive you and they control your emotions, so they cause you to buy more of certain products. But they also have tricked us in 101 ways in the taste, and they've made different flavorings, like McDonald's French fries have 7 different flavorings, Dorito chips. That's why you can't just eat one, because your taste buds never get satiated, since they put different, and they're so slight that you and I can't distinguish them, but internally our taste buds make that little distinction, so they keep yearning for more. So it's done based on trickery. I mean, it's a psychology that tricks us, and they also use demographics to trick us. Because the other thing that they have found is they found that it's a lot easier to get a customer to buy more of a product than it is to find a new customer. So the sadness of all of this is the fact that they're going out, and these 200,000 per year marketing executives are in charge of all this, and they confront their future victims in purpose, and basically they say, today, here's one of the table talk in the homes of such executives. Quote, unquote, today I met a 10 200-pound women who barely had the energy to participate in the group. If my team can get each of them up to 210 pounds by April by increasing their consumption of our potato chips, we'll make our first quarter sales numbers, and I'll get the bonus we need to take that vacation in Barbados. Hello, zero responsibility to help the health of human beings. All they care about is one thing, sales and more sales to the same victims they've already created. So one of the great scandals of the junk food culture is the extent to which most enthusiastic promoters, like these marketers, they personally will not touch any of the very products that they're pushing, right? So they target, who are they targeting? Lower income, unhealthy, overweight consumers for their products. And once they become a product, they hire company chemists to ensure that they'll never be satisfied with eating just a healthy, as if there is ever a healthy amount, but just a healthy amount of it. So it's gotten so crazy. And they prey on the psychology. They prey on addiction. They prey on putting ingredients in there that are absolutely going to stimulate your taste buds so that you become addicted to them. Now, this is our food industry. Now, what's interesting is that the tobacco companies were actually sued by the federal government for the same thing they were doing inside tobacco cigarettes. Do you guys remember? you'll probably remember this about 10 years ago when they were all sued, and I don't even know what exact year it was, but I remember when I came down, and they caught these guys lying through their teeth. They said, oh, we don't have anything in there, and then finally they, you know, I mean, they lied in front of Congress, I don't know how many times, but it was ridiculous how many times they lied. And finally they nailed them down because some of the scientists finally fessed up to what they were doing. Well, do you know what happened to those cigarette companies? One of them, Philip Morris, has become the second largest food company in the world. So they're taking their same strategies that they used in cigarettes, and they're applying it to all their food stuff. Isn't this unbelievable? So welcome to the world of being victim to these kind of perpetrators in our food industry. And he said they're so big and they're so strong and they're so powerful, he doesn't even see, Paul Zane Pilsner can't even see how we're going to stop them except by educating the world in what's happening. We need people to understand this. And I put another quote in the outline for you guys to use too. Over the short term, vitamin mineral deficiencies manifest themselves as mood swings, lack of energy, joint pain, failing eyesight, hearing loss, and thousands of other ailments that medical science tells us to accept with advancing age. Over the long term, these deficiencies cause major illnesses like cancer and heart disease. We're not putting up with that, right? Exactly. So we just talked about the targeting of all these people and shifting, getting these people to shift to drugs and maybe shifting to better drugs or generic drugs. But most importantly, what our goal is to help people get off of all drugs. And, you know, a lot of drug companies say the price is due to the research, and that is so false. Paul Zane Pilsner brings that up in his book, and he says much of the research being done today around this pharmaceutical industry stuff is government financed. And secondly, he says you can check any of their financial statements. Over the last 10 years, their number one expense is not research. It's marketing. It's marketing. They, and you and I both know that because we see drug commercials on television every day, assuming you watch television. So, and he says the sadness of it is if you look at people 65 and over, for a lot of them, drug costs, prescription costs, because Medicare doesn't cover them, drug costs represent the number one cost for most of them. So there are people in our society today, every day, over the age of 65, who are having to have to make a decision to buy food or get their drugs, and that's sad. And he listed two of the saddest facts that we have in our world today, and that is one, more profitable. It's more profitable for medical suppliers to produce products consumers need to use the rest of their lives than to produce health solutions. So as we've heard many people say in the past, I've looked at some of the real responsible politicians, people in the medical industrial complex saying if they would have had it all over again, they should have made drug companies charitable organizations, not capitalist companies, because they're driven by profits, not by sanity, which is how do we really come to health solutions. So that's where we are, people. It's just a sad fact of life. Secondly, the third parties that pay for most medical treatments have no long-term financial stake in the health of their employees. So in other words, they'll pay for you temporarily, but you retire, you're gone, so they don't have any real long-term stake in you. So it's really kind of a catch-22. And he claims that the $1.3 trillion food industry creates most of the problem, and the $2.0 trillion medical industry treats only the symptoms for the most part, and it adds up to what he calls an apparent vast nefarious conspiracy. I love that language as well. How about using good advice to destroy customers? Well, that's another thing that, you know, even they promoted back, the food companies came out when low-fat diets and everybody wanted low-fat. Remember that in the 90s? We went into low-fat diets, and the obesity rate doubled in that same time period. Why? Because, first of all, the food companies started using no fat on the outside of tons of their products, like pretzels, which never had any fat in it to start with. But as long as they slapped the language, no fat, on the outside of the packaging, guess what? You bought it. Again, talking about the marketing geniuses, how to capture you and lie, in effect, lie to you, right? No fat isn't lying to you, but it gives you the implies that at some point in time, they came in and removed the fat that was in those pretzels, so somehow they're better than somebody else's. But what they did when they did actually take the fat out of certain products, what did they add back to make sure it tasted good? Sugar. And that's why we had this doubling of the obesity rate, because they put tons of sugar to retain that flavor. And did it help the health? Did it change the health issue? That wasn't what the food companies were after. They weren't trying to help us with a health issue. They were trying to figure out how to market something better. So if you take the fat out, how do we market something better and still make our profits? And that's what they're all about. So don't confuse ourselves with participants in the health industry. They're a far cry from that. And we go onward. Why don't we know more about this? Well, there's another problem that's going on, as Paul Zane Silzer puts it. There's a major disinformation campaign by the food and drug companies. And how do they control that? Because they spend more dollars on ad campaigns on public TV. Where's the wellness revolution on television? Hardly exists, does it? It's on, you know, all the private shows, the charitable organization shows, things like that. But you're not going to see it on the major channels. You're just going to see drug advertisement and major ad campaigns that they use to confuse the public, as we've seen over and over again throughout the years. So he says there's an economic solution for this economic problem, and it's building a vast business in the wellness revolution. It's time for us to step in and really put ourselves, you know, out front as four leaders in this industry, and we all can be that. And there's a demand out there. We just have to go and secure it and educate people to get there. One of the things he brought up in the book, which I thought was really fascinating, and I was not familiar with this. You know, a lot of times when I do my talks, I talk about how the government, when we talk about how the JANA, the Journal of American Medical Association, in 2002, for the first time ever, made the statement that it might be prudent for us to take vitamins and minerals. That was, and I would always tell people that. That's one of my slides in my presentation I do on health. And if you go back and you look at, we started using vitamins and minerals in the 1920s and 30s. Why did it take them 70 years? 70 years. And Paul Zane Pilzer outlined the rationale for that. Now, he didn't talk about it from my perspective that I just gave you. I'm just telling you that this was great information for me to understand. And he said, really, our whole revolution of wellness began with a gentleman, J.I. Rodale. And he was the founder of Prevention Magazine. In fact, Pilzer dedicated his new wellness revolution book to this man. And he made his main argument back in 1954 was that eating large quantities of red meat and dairy products dramatically increased the risk of heart disease, and that physical activity actually decreased the risk of having a heart attack. And the society went after him, not just the FTC, but the food companies, the meat and dairy industry attacked him. They sued him. They tied him up in court for the next 15, 16 years. He was in court. And on and on and on, saying that the FTC said your claims are not substantiated. So, and it was the same time that the government was going after trying to get everybody to eat more dairy and meat products, because that's there tied in directly with the meat and dairy industries. So this was going, and they were arguing, that was so funny, I read, they were arguing that exercise can actually cause heart attacks instead of help avoid them. So how can you suggest that more exercise is needed? I mean, it was absurd, some of the arguments. If you look back at this history, you'll just laugh to yourself of how naive and how silly the federal government was. But this opened up, you know, it was Rodale's fighting this. And he actually passed away in 1971 before it was resolved. But soon after he passed, the government reversed its position, no longer requiring advertisers of information-based products to establish the efficacy of their claim. And that really opened up the floodgates to wellness products. And if you look today, Prevention Magazine has over 12 million readers. So that's pretty cool history. But getting back to the idea, okay, so why did the medical society, we can see their ignorance here, right, in just dealing with Rodale. Well, why did the medical industry reject vitamins and minerals? Well, he talked about it. He goes back in the 19th and 20th centuries, the traditional medical medicine rejected wellness, because what happened is they started coming up with cures, quote-unquote, and ability to eliminate certain diseases like smallpox, polio, tuberculosis, right? Because at the turn of the century, we were using basically wellness approaches was using different plants. In fact, a lot of people talk about books that were published back then that really had the home-based cures for a lot of different things. And today you can't even find those. You can't find them. They don't really exist. I mean, people who have them they hold them near and dear to their hearts because they're so few and far between. But they used to be, they were classics. But the medical industry threw them out because what happened is once they started eliminating these diseases like smallpox, polio, and tuberculosis, they became very arrogant about that they had all the answers and all this other stuff was just witchcraft cure. Well, back then, all we knew about was cells. We didn't know anything about vitamins, minerals, nutrients. We didn't know anything of those things because we did not have the electron microscope. The electron microscope is what really opened up for us the concept of what our cells are made of. Remember, we talked about even understanding the glyconutrient formations on the outside of cells. So that electron microscope just opened up a whole new arena of science to us. So all of a sudden, it wasn't until late, even though we had, you know, St. Georgie back in 1930 talk about vitamin C, his was not based on anything that was done under the microscope. His was based on just using vitamin C, yeah, versus, you know, plant-based that had the other cofactors, now we know were bioflavonoids, so that you could really, the bioflavonoids and the vitamin C combined were the ones that made a difference in the body, not just synthetic vitamin C. And that's exactly what St. Georgie proved way back in the 1930s. But we didn't have the science. We didn't have what was in a cell. We didn't have vitamin minerals. We didn't have any. He didn't even know they were called bio. He called them vitamin K, which turned out to be bioflavonoids. So it was this lack of science that caused the scientific arena or society to take control and just deny vitamins and minerals were even necessary or important or anything like that. But the electron microscope coming along opened the door to understand the importance of these nutrients, and finally the medical society jumped on board. So we see the history behind this and what actually took it to change that. And then today, of course, we're talking about today we live in the most incredible time. Pilsner brings up wealth surpassing anyone's wildest dreams. But the problem is our plague of obesity and ill health brings more unhappiness than anything else. So, and we are sharing our plight. Just as we have shared our wealth across the world with capitalism, we also have shared our plight of obesity. And it's only going to get worse in all these other nations who are following in our footsteps. A lot of them rejecting GMO, a lot of them rejecting some of our food products, but you still see a McDonald's and a Burger King on every corner, no matter what country you go to, right? So we've cast all of our negative habits upon the rest of the world. Then the next chapter is on baby boom regeneration, understanding and controlling the demand for wellness. And, of course, we're familiar with baby boomers. They're still about 28% of the population and control about 50% of the nation's wealth. That was true in 2007. That has somewhat declined up to today's date because we're now 8 years later. They talked about the Gen X. He talked about Gen X being huge. Their most productive and highest spending years started in 2012. So that's a good category of people to go after because, of course, if they have their highest spending years, what are they going to spend more money on? Health and wellness products. And then he went back and studied the economics. He talked about Keynesian economics and how we adopted those. We said that we don't want, you know, Keynesian economics was to tax the rich because we didn't want them to get complacent. And he promoted oversaving. And both of those things turned out to be wrong assertions in that today in our economy, we know that the people that have the least incentive are typically the very poor. And overspending is basically the core principle behind our GNP or gross national production or productivity is all spending or GDP. Gross domestic product is spending our number one specific item of that. So we are for spending, not for excessive saving. So both of his theories are wrong, but we can learn from what he taught us. It's important to know that 95% of the things we spend money on were not even around when we were born. And the same is going to also be true about wellness. He talked about different kinds of demands that we have unlimited demand because our demand is both quality and quantity. We start off on a preliminary basis with a quantity demand. So what that means is that when we find out we want something, let's say we want to go out and we buy a TV, and all of a sudden we don't need one TV, but we need two TVs or four TVs, so we're looking around our house, and now we have a quantity demand. And the savvy retailer knows that, that the first purchase is just purely the beginning of the relationship. But what happens after we get three or four TVs is all of a sudden we get a better taste for something better. So now we want a bigger TV, we want a flat screen TV, we start looking at things that are better. So now we have a quality demand. So we go from quantity demand to a quality demand. And that's an appetite for something different and improved of a kind of product. And once we satisfy the quality demand, then we go back to finding something else that we start over the whole cycle again, whatever that might be in our life, where we start with buying one of them and then going further with more quantity, then quality again. So he brings up this analysis because he says it's crucial for us in the wellness industry to understand that we shouldn't be fighting to have the cheapest product in the wellness marketplace because we're going to be obsolete. And we see that today across the board. We see it when we look at the New York Attorney General's office attacking all those herbal products that on four major chains, Walgreens, Walmart, Target, and GNC, basically finding that of 80% of the herbal products, 80% of them had none of the ingredients on the outside of the label. So when you put poor quality out there, you're going to eventually disappear. That's going to be gone. You're going to get annihilated. People are going to have enough of you. And you could say, well, what about the people that don't have any money? Aren't they going to buy low quality? Probably for a very short period of time because, number one, they're going to be knocked off the shelf. Number two, once they start buying some quantity of products, they're going to, again, look for a higher quality. They're going to start researching for a higher quality. So he says the most successful wellness companies today manufacture and distribute the highest quality, which often means the highest priced, wellness products and services. Isn't that a great quote? That's kind of where Manatech is. I mean, sometimes you complain about the cost of our product, but we have some of the highest quality wellness products in the entire industry. So don't get discouraged by the price of the products. Understand that people will eventually get there if they're not already there. And most you can tell by the consumers you have that plenty of people are already in demand for that quality. And what usually triggers a greater demand is usually a wellness experience. And Paul Zane Pilzer talked about this at Manifest as well. He says, if you want to increase the amount of people that you have in your organizations and that you're touching with Manatech products, you need to increase the number of wellness experiences. And I just credit Manatech. They give us the opportunity to do that because of why. They give us this 100% money-back guarantee. And if you're not using that today when you're approaching people, I don't lead with it. I basically conclude with it. I don't want anyone walking out of my grasp who I approach with this based on any kind of money concern. It's never going to happen in my life. Because the issue is that you have no risk. I want you to have a wellness experience. Once they have a wellness experience, guess what? This is statistics, people. Once people have a wellness experience, they capture the vision, they jump on board, and now they're going to buy more quantity and eventually look at higher quality. And Manatech continues to come up with new products to help satiate that demand. So know that you know you're in the right place. You got a great company supporting you in that. And that well, that 100% money-back guarantee is terrific for all of us. So he also talked about structural unemployment and from technology changes. And we talked a little bit about that when I reviewed the outline from the manifest where he talked about the and he talks about how unemployment leads to economic growth. Because when you have this displacement, remember he talked about if you go to a deserted island, they have 10 fishermen, they're all using poles, and all of a sudden a missionary shows up and presents them with a net, and now instead of taking 10 people to get enough fish for the whole island, it only takes two. But that's terrific because everybody can say, wow, the economy's at scale, that's terrific, we've become so efficient, but what happened to the other 8 fishermen? They effectively lost their job. So you have high levels of unemployment. That's called structural unemployment. And you can't stop structural unemployment without destroying your economy. So many countries tried to do that, and they destroyed their economy, and then they went back to what they perceived was something that worked by mimicking the United States in terms of becoming capitalistic. We see that in Eastern Europe and China today. they decided to become free market economies because they were destroying their internal economy by going more towards a communistic approach to it. So if you look at it this way, you're looking at people are going to be what? They're going to be coming after the wellness industry, because in the wellness industry, you're going to when you have the structural unemployment, you have this huge, massively growing industry, and the investors are going to look for characteristics before they launch a mass market business. And what Paul Zane Pilgrim says, they're going to look for five things: affordability, and of course that's critical to have, that you're looking for something that's affordable on a monthly basis. Number two, when he says the word legs, he's talking about no amount of marketing will make a product or service ubiquitous unless it has legs. In other words, the ability to walk off the shelf without promotion once a critical mass of people own it. And that's what's going on with glyconutrients. So once a critical mass of people own it, it'll just walk off the shelf. And that's called having legs. Continual consumption, of course, we know that today. We produce $100 a month. We have continual consumption. When you're consuming a product, you buy it every single month, which leads to a phenomenal business opportunity, right? Universal appeal is everybody wants to be healthy. We got to start educating people on a wellness revolution to achieve health, and that's the universal appeal. And then low consumption time. People don't want to spend a lot of energy around consumption. That's why I think these new tube sticks that we have, like with the GI Pro Balance and also the Glyco Boom, I think these are the future of a lot of our products, because it makes it so easy. And especially with the younger generation, they want simple. They don't want complicated. They want it to be simple, easy to do, and that's what they're looking for. And Manitech is being more sensitive to those issues to create the products that fit, you know, our industry. So wellness fits all of these five distinctive characteristics incredibly well. So it's just important now, you know, we look at the increase in the amount of Americans that are taking supplements. And, you know, in 2007, it was over 50% of our population. I think the statistic today is around 68% are taking them. And it's just awesome to see that we have such a huge marketplace. And now what's our next step? Educate and move forward in one of the greatest growing industries in the marketplace today, which is the wellness industry. Okay, people, that's it. That's all I have from the first. That doesn't even get us halfway through the book, but I think I'll be able to conclude the rest of the book next week. And hopefully there's a lot of great information in here to help you take your business to another level. Use the quotes that I've given you. I plan at the end of this series of these 2 weeks is to give, like, it's just a laundry list of quotes that I think are really great quotes you can slap on flyers, you can put in emails, you can put in bottom as a byline underneath your name. He just gives us so much terrific information in this book. In fact, I don't know, by the time I'm done with it, I was so excited about what I did today that I was thinking, you know, I think GoPro and then the new wellness revolution should be the first two mandatory books that people read who enter into our business with us, because it gives us such great insight into where our business is going as a wellness revolution. Join us in this wellness revolution. All right, any last-minute questions? Because otherwise I've got to go. Go ahead.
Marita.
Uh-huh, Anita.
Yes. I was going to recommend that with a new person, you give them this marvelous outline that you've gone over today and will next week. I mean, this is wonderful. And
yeah.
The other thing is, back in the 50s, my father did a wee bit of side farming, came home very upset. The government wouldn't let him sell his new harvested wheat. They made him put it in bins, and they sealed them. And every year for 5 years, they would open the bins once a year and spray it with herbicides, pesticides, and fungicides. And in 5 years was over, they let him market it as fresh wheat.
When did this happen?
I believe, if memory is correct, it started about in either the late 40s or the 50s.
Oh, my gosh, Anita. See, firsthand information, firsthand knowledge right there. Thank you for sharing that. It's incredible.
You're welcome.
Yep.
I just wanted to tell you, too, when I heard Paul Zane Pilcher on stage, he actually said it was a $4.2 trillion sickness industry, which surprised me as well. because
it was
$2 trillion, close to when he did his first book. So it kind of makes sense that it would be that big, but I didn't realize it had gotten that out of hand either. But it shows you the size of the market we need to go after.
Exactly. Thanks for those updated numbers. Yeah, I knew it was larger than two, because, again, his book is out of date because it's 2007, and I guess he used the same numbers here. But $4.2 trillion industry, people. Unbelievable. And we should be a $4.2 trillion industry and reduce them, the sickness industry to a nothing industry in my book. So thanks, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else? All right, people, great. Have a great week. We'll use this information, and next week I'll finish off The New Wellness Revolution by Paul Zane Pilser, and have a super week, first week of a business period, so let's start off with a boom. Love you guys. Bye, everybody.